everyone. My name's Talal Karkouti. I co-host the podcast with Alexi. I produce it. Who here listens to the podcast? Nice. Who here's on the Patreon? All right. The rest of you lot, come on. Okay, thanks for choosing to be here. I know you could have all easily been at the Riyadh Comedy Festival instead. You chose us, so I'm very grateful. You're about to witness a live taping of a podcast. We have no idea what we're going to talk about, so it could easily be really shit. Let's see. But when me and Alexi run out of stuff to talk about, we're going to turn to you and ask you for any questions. So out of the 200 of you in a sold-out room in Shoreham, I hope you can think of a few questions for Alexi, yeah? Right, shall we get to it then? It's Friday the 3rd of October. We're at the Rope Tackle Arts Centre down in Shoreham. Please welcome to the stage, Alexi Sale! Almost went into a twerk there. There it is. He's twerking. We got Alexi Sale to twerk. We did it.
Oh, it's been by the sea that's made me so. Never done that before.
Hello, Alexi.
Hello.
Welcome to Shoreham.
Thank you. As I said, I flew down here in my Messerschmitt BF-109. Flew into Shoreham Aerodrome. It's a bit tricky bringing her in. If any of you know, the old BF-109's a tricky beast. Bring in full flaps.
Full flaps, yeah, on a day like today, windy day.
Mm. Yeah, and that's the end of my sad fantasy. I actually, it was funny. Actually, I came down on the train. I was in standard class. It was next to us. Yeah, I mean, I'm sure you all know the trains. There was a first class, like one of them little first class compartments. And, it's got like four tables. And the ticket inspector came through, didn't look at all in standard class, went into first class, which was full. And everybody in first class was thrown out.
And then did he come out to you and say, Alexi, this way, it's free for you now?
Yeah, I should have done. I thought it was funny. There was every single person in first class wasn't entitled to be there, which
we love a chance.
Pisses me off. Yeah,
it pisses you off.
They're quite posh-looking women and everything. Green.
Why does that piss you off? You don't think people? You think everyone should be in their place and should?
Yeah,
respect authority.
I'm secretly revealing something very unattractive about myself. Yeah, sorry, I wasn't listening to myself there, and that slipped out. And that was
you bastard. You bastard.
Profoundly. Oh, I don't fucking people in first class should fucking pay for first class.
There shouldn't be a first class at all, Alexi. Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot. Forgot who I was pretending to be.
I heard I was at a show. I was doing a show and Robin Ince was headlining.
Right.
And I told him that you threatened to replace me with him once if I step out of line. But then he quoted you in one of his... He does poems now.
Yeah.
But he quoted you and because someone was like... They were talking about champagne socialists.
Yes.
And then he said, but like Alexi Sale said, champagne socialists means everyone should have
champagne. Fighting for everybody to have champagne, yeah. But really, I was just excusing the fact that I was caught in the Groucho Club. swigging Dom Perignon. And very quickly, I said, yes, I'm fighting for the rights of everybody to be in the Groucho Club to swig. Dom Perignon. Robin, I got a little patio at the back, and a Robin came and landed, has been visiting me. And I call it Robin Ince. Talks less than fucking Robin Ince. No. And also, there's one other thing, actually, sorry, but I don't know whether it's, but it's also like on the patio, there's always, there's like one bee. comes. There's never more than one. It looks exhausted. And then there's like one wasp. And I was actually talking to a friend of mine, and she was lives up in the Highlands, and she was doing her beehives. And I said, what do they taste like? And
you shouldn't
don't eat bees because
bit tart.
And yeah, the Romans used to eat them, but covered in chocolate. But she said the honey that her bees produce, it's like like all the flowers over the year, you can taste in the honey, you know.
Yes.
Crocuses and sycamore in spring, and then going through to,
wow,
you know all the flowers. You've
taken up poetry.
Yeah, it's going to be beautiful. Well, I told her about Alinda had a friend who had some beehives in Regent's Park, and he used to give us some of his honey, and it tasted of dog shit. I mean, not like completely, you know, but
there's a
hint. Just an undertone of dog shit. Diesel and crack cocaine.
Regent's Park honey, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, I used to sell it to all the fancy restaurants in the world. Terrible.
And all the, so you got loads of tired lone insects in your patio.
There's always one sort of bee, yeah, single bee comes around and goes exhaustedly doing whatever. I don't quite know what they do, but, you know, collecting the pollen.
Yeah.
And it looks really fed up. Oh, fuck it. And then there's like a wasp. One wasp.
Yeah.
Just made it over the world, just about, you know, limping in to land like Messerschmitt BF-109 at Shoreham Aerodrome. I thought I might get... That's one of the things you strive for, isn't it? Local reference.
Yeah.
It's one of the things you ask, you know, when you're doing stand-up, you say, you know, where's the trendy area? And, you know, if you've got any local... I thought I'd get a bigger laugh on Shoreham Aerodrome, really, but because I know it. But I suppose it's still... reeling from that. That jet that crashed, I suppose.
But you guys are really proud of your aerodrome, aren't you?
On
my drive-in, I drove past a primary school called Aerodrome Primary School.
Well, because my friend, Sheila's not here, I don't think. She's not
Aerodrome Primary Academy. I'm getting questions from the front row. We'll get to the questions in a minute.
Well, it was often used as a location in, like, Poirot, isn't it?
Murmurs of
and
approval.
Stuff like that. And I just thought, no, but...
and our lovely...
Say some shit about Worthing, and maybe that'll get a big laugh. Like, oh, see, that was bad. Yeah, Worthing. It's fucking shit, isn't it, Worthing? Oh, constant Worthing, yeah?
Me and my partner, B, we have a private
She's
joke.
She's not really a B.
Huh? She,
she's not a bee.
She's not a bee. No. This is the bee episode, isn't it?
Yeah.
No, her name is Bee.
Yeah.
Beatrice, as my dad used to call her. She's like, it's just bee, mate. We've got a private joke that when we always we look at each other and we go back to Worthing because we went to a wedding a few years ago in Eastbourne, and the guy who they hired to do the photo booth, the fun wedding photo booth, had all these props and stuff, and one of them was a questionable Jamaican Rasta hat thing. There's all these middle-class white people wearing this Rasta hat and posing. Yeah. And at the end of the night, I was having a cigarette out the back, and I saw him packing his car up, and he was holding the Rasta hat, and he looked at me and went, back to Worthing. Just me and my Rasta hat going back to fucking Worthing. And I'm like, all right, good for you, mate. Fucking take your racist hat and go fucking back to Worthing, mate. Jesus. But it was very comfortable. Felt snug hat. Yeah. Cool. That's my Worthing story.
Yeah.
And we were talking to the lovely fellow Tom Beard, who booked us to play here tonight, and he was telling us that about Shoreham Beach being like the Hollywood of South England, because he's like, yeah, Chris Evans used to live there.
So my friend used to be friendly with Chris Evans, and they were when he just when he'd just broken through, they were stuck in traffic in a limo with him, and he'd wind down the window and shout to people, look, it's me.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, and he, I did. And Lisa, our friend Lisa, she told him that I could name a gun for every letter of the alphabet, and so he got me to do it on
TFI Friday.
TFI Friday, yeah.
Wow! Can you actually? Let's do it now.
Oh God.
AK-47. I'll get you started.
Yeah, AK-47 or something. Yeah. Beretta, Colt, Derringer.
Okay.
Enfield.
Enfield.
Flauser. I don't know.
Okay, you stop. You got up to F.
F, yeah.
Shout
FN,
one out.
FN, Fabrique National. There was a, we did on the podcast, one of our podcasts. I feel like I have to be more, since we're, this is the first time we've done a podcast out of town, I feel like I have to put a bit more in, really, because we've come all this way and you've got, you're here. And,
because you're here.
And you're here, so... I feel like I'm having to be more up than I usually am. But we did a podcast, didn't we, about the illegalists years ago. And he talked about the guy, these are these...
The French...
Anarchists, yeah, the Bonnot Gang. Yes,
The anarchists who, they invented the getaway car.
That's right.
With the very, very first like limousines in 1920.
But they had their favourite gun as well, which was a 1910 Browning made by FN. And Alfred, the playwright Alfred Jarry also had, he had two, and he gave one to Picasso. So all these, like all the artists in 1920s Paris, they're all like packing nines, you know, and they're all like, pop, 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 motherfucker. I'm fucking Cezanne, asshole.
Hand over the money.
Yeah, I got my eye, I'm...
Don't clap, very it makes good. Them angry, please.
You will have a terrible time on the way back. Don't make him angry.
You have a shit memory, but when it comes to guns, you can remember the gun of the Bonnot Gang.
Yeah,
in Paris. 1910, it's so weird.
Browning FN, 9mm, which was also the gun that started the First World War. Because
The Franz Ferdinand,
Princip, the Serbian nationalist, shot Austrian Ferdinand with a Browning 1910 9mm. I'm having a great time. I don't know about you. I didn't know we were coming here. Rob Newman had a great line about he said, you know, the First World War started because, you know, Archduke Ferdinand was assassinated. He said, nobody's that popular. I'm stealing other comedians' material now. Robert also had a great line. He was in a car in the States years ago, and the guy was talking about how the taxi driver was talking about how the United States, you know, is hated around the world. Mm. And he said, oh, it's like, you know, it's like you people should have your own flag or something. And Robert said, we do, it's yours, but it's on fire.
That's good.
Yeah, good line.
That's a good one.
Yeah. He's not getting any, I'm not giving him any money. We'll cut it out of the recording. When it goes out, we'll fuck, yeah.
So I reached out to some people on Instagram to give me some fodder to talk to you about tonight. You know, sometimes we just go through your IMDb, talk about various projects you've done.
Yes.
Someone suggested I ask you about this film that you did back in... Well, hey, I'm going to read the synopsis. Yeah. Tell me if you...
Which it's my history of shit films, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I've been in, yeah.
There's one for each letter of the alphabet, I think. this one, the synopsis says, when Martin gets out of prison, the guards warn him to get a job or else end up back in jail. So he decides to start his own band. The band are a smashing success until the police find out it was backed with stolen money. What is this film?
It's a film called Swing.
Correct. Ding, ding, ding.
It's starred Lisa Stansfield. Yeah. Who had been around the world but couldn't find her baby.
Yep.
Which I think, frankly, is a matter for social services. But And it was Hugo Weaving played Lisa Stansfield. Not Hugo,
Hugo
Weaving.
Weaving played Hugo Spear.
Hugo Spear played. I don't know who else.
As well.
I mimed playing the trumpet. And I really enjoyed, I thought I was really good at miming playing the trumpet. And I wondered if there was a kind of venue where you could go to mime just playing the trumpet. And it would be, I'd really like that. I'd really like to do that.
Well, they do like air guitar tournaments and stuff.
I guess so, yeah.
Air trumpets.
Yeah.
So who did you play in this film?
I played a character called Mighty Mac. It was set in Liverpool, and Rita Tushingham was in it. And I was, I think I was in a Protestant marching band or something, wasn't I? I think I was. I played the trumpet in a Protestant marching band.
And did you join Hugo Spear's band then?
Yeah, that was the I was the trumpet player in the band. Yeah, it wasn't a hit.
The film wasn't.
No.
Never heard of it.
Lisa Stansfield's acting career didn't really ever recover from that.
Really?
I don't think so. She's very nice, though. She was lovely.
Yeah, was she nice to work with?
Yeah.
Any wild nights out with...
I think she did. I didn't. But, she did.
And Clarence Clemons is in it?
Oh, Clarence Clemons, who played the saxophone in Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band. Yeah. Band. And he was like a barrel. He was shaped... He was like a... Like, no British person is somehow. He was, like, battle-shaped.
Wow.
Yeah. He was, you know, yeah. I was like, you play the saxophone in Bruce Springsteen's E Street Band, don't you? And he's like, yeah. I'm like, yeah. Okay. Wow. Do you know what...
It's like...
The Z for gun is... Zastava. And he's like, man, I don't want to care about any of that stuff, man.
Is there an X gun?
I don't know. No, I think, yeah, there's like a Mexican gun called like a Zengu or something. Zingu or Pingu or something. I think there is an X gun, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right, anything else from Swing? Anything I can...
Any anecdotes?
Any other threads in there?
No, I don't
Nick Mead
think...
was the director.
Yeah, he hasn't worked since, has he?
Not much, no. You've been in so many films that have killed careers, but you've just ploughed on through, haven't you?
Just...
You're invulnerable.
Yeah. I should do a show in which I talk about them all. It's be interesting. Well, I don't know.
Well, interesting. I don't know about that. Is this interesting? How are we doing so far? We're off to a explosive start.
Yeah. Which it's an odd hybrid, isn't it? Watching a... podcast being recorded.
Yeah, let's get meta. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like, I started on that and I thought something had occurred to me. I said, it's like watching a podcast being recorded. It's like watching it being. And I thought I'd think of something and I didn't. I thought something really funny would have come to me. Like really, really something brilliant. Like they worked on several different levels.
Yeah.
And was also like a critique of modern culture and capitalism and like that. Like, and you'd go, fucking hell, that's amazing.
No.
And it didn't. Not nothing.
Just spluttered to a stop. Yeah.
It's like a thing. It's like watching a thing that's like a different thing, isn't it?
This is like watching a tired bee on your patio floor.
It's like watching a tired bee record a podcast. Oh, day, fucking geraniums. Oh, Christ. Oh, fucking geraniums. Oh, God. I impressed the sound crew at the sound check, didn't I? Should I do that?
Oh yeah,
I did the prologue from Henry the Fifth.
Emergency cord. We don't need that yet.
Oh, for a music.
No, we don't need it yet. Wait till it gets really fucking dull. Let's torture these guys a bit.
Did I ever talk about when I was in? My brother, the Tempest with Max von Sydow at the Old Vic Theatre.
We've covered it briefly, but what have you? Yeah, tell us about that. At which theatre? The Old Vic.
Old Vic, directed by Jonathan Miller. at the Old Vic. I played Trinculo. Well, people often say to me, I say I was in the production of The Tempest at the Old Vic, and they say, who did you play? Caliban. Everybody told me they were all retired school teachers in the audience. That's what they told me before. I didn't get the fucking Caliban reference. Caliban is the monster.
I'm a Shakespeare ignoramus.
Caliban is the hideous monster.
What's the general gist of The Tempest?
The Tempest, it's Shakespeare's last play. Okay. He said, fucking knocked it on the head after that. Like, fuck this. fuck this for a game of Tudors and Stuarts. I'm fucking knocking this on the fucking head. That's how he talked, you know, Shakespeare. He's like, fucking hell, I'm the fucking bad of Southwark, me. To be or not to fucking be, that's the fucking question, you cunts. So The Tempest is about a group of people land on this remote island, a group of Venetians.
Right.
There's all these kind of spirits on the island. And Jonathan Miller's interpretation was that all the islanders were, the people who were shipwrecked were white and all the islanders were black, because it was at the time when the New World was just being discovered and Africa was being discovered and Montaigne and Noble Savage and all that. So it was Cyril Unry, who was later in The Bill, played Ariel. Rudolph Walker was in EastEnders, the other fella, a Caliban, and I was a drunken servant.
You played drunken servant?
I played Trinculo, the drunken servant, yeah.
Did you have any major effect on the plot?
Well, yeah, kind of. Well, it was a disaster. I've not talked about this. you're getting the good fucking
this
stuff.
This is the
you're
most we've talked about it.
Was in The Tempest, and you're getting the proper showbiz. You know, there's a famous, I've forgotten his name briefly, there's a wonderful old, and it's quite a well-known show business anecdote, but somebody's walking down the Strand one day and he meets this old, I can't remember his name now, Hugh something or other, famous actor, and they get drunk, they get pissed anyway, and then they say, I know, let's go to the theatre. And so they go in there and they're sitting through this play and the drunken actor elbows the other broken head. This is a good bit, this is where I come on. But
drunken servant. What was this role?
Yeah. So well, no, it was because on the opening night, because it was Prospero was played by
von Sydow.
Max von Sydow. Yeah, who did look like his family had been machine gunned 5 minutes before payment. He used to send me a Christmas card for years every. Merry Christmas from Max von Sydow. Anyway, he dried on the opening night for 5 minutes. He just forgot all his lines. It was nightmares. And it really terrified the audience. So by the time I came on, I was with this old actor called Peter Bayliss playing the other drunken seven. By the time we came on, we were so kind of, they could see we knew what we were doing and we were full of energy that we got a standing ovation.
Oh.
And then we used to get an ovation every night, which really pissed off everybody else. And I've never done.
You come and do your curtain call, when you
bow. We'd go off when we did. We do our scene, which I can't remember.
In the middle of the play, you
in
got
the
a
middle
standing
of the play,
o.
We got a fucking, we got a round of applause for standing ovation every night.
Jesus
and,
Christ!
I put in a line. I would say, I can't remember what it was, but Jonathan Miller said, "Let it out." I'd throw myself to the floor and shout bastards at one point, which obviously wasn't in the original Shakespeare folio. But we get a round of applause or like every night as we came on, just because everybody was so relieved. There was a bit of energy, really. And then obviously at the curtain call,
Was it a good production in hindsight? Do you
not
think
really.
It was
I think that it was, I mean, I think that Jonathan Miller was kind of spinning his wheels a bit, really. He'd done that same idea in the 60s, really. And I felt very sorry for Max because he was 17th century. I mean, he's Swedish, so speaking 17th century English was difficult for him. Really.
Yeah.
And I think he was very unhappy, really. So it wasn't a happy production, really. And I've never done a play since. It's the only play I ever did.
Do you believe this thing that, like, Shakespeare was actually 16 different women?
Nah,
or something?
I think I think a lot of that, because people can't believe that he's... The reason that they have to say that he's an aristocrat is because they can't stomach the fact that he was relatively working class, relatively poor. So they have to pretend, they have to say that it was the, you know, Duke of Sandwich or whatever. Yeah. Knows it all. So I think, no, I think it's classist. I think that Shakespeare, I mean, I think he was, a, I mean, he was a genius, really. I think that, I mean, I'm not, I mean, a lot, some of the, you know, I mean, a lot of the plays are impenetrable, but I think the political ones, I mean, like Julius Caesar, Henry V, you know, they really get at something really profound about power. He really understood the nature of power, you know, and the way that, for instance, the way that Henry V abandons his all his old friends and stuff like that and completely changes, really, and becomes a kind of conniving. You know, it's very reminiscent. It's the Labour Party conference but with better language. You know, I mean, it is. I think it's the same shit in a way. The way that, you know, Henry V, that process of the way people change when they get into power. I think he'd observed that already, and this was in the, you know, 1600s. So he is, I mean, he is very, you know, I can't, the fucking comedies and stuff. So there's all that shit. You know, I did that bit where I think I did it in Sandwich Bar where I said, like, anybody who laughs at the jokes in Shakespeare is a twat. You know what I mean? Because they're like, my Lord Essex does act as if he's got a pumpkin on his nose. And, go, and it's some joke about fucking Tudor fucking fiscal policy, you know, pumpkin tax or something. And nobody fucking knows what it's about.
So avoid.
I'd never go to the Globe. That's just another tip for you. If you come up to London, it's fucking awful. I hate it. And then they all overact. If I see another actor do that, phallic acting at the Globe, because it's open air, you know. Like, you know, we've got things like roofs now, you know what I mean?
Why not use it?
Helicopter goes over. Oh, what is that metal bear spin across the sky? It's a fucking helicopter. It's got no fucking roof. I've got a lot of actor friends and they made me sit through so much shit at the Globe.
Do you like it when they do, like, you know, like I saw when I was a school trip, they took us to see like a hip-hop reimagining of Romeo and Juliet?
Nah, like, I don't really know. We did, because we did Henry, the only reason I know Henry, because we did Henry V for O-level, that's the only reason I can bore on about it. And, Stan, who was in our class, they let us off, we had the afternoon off, and then we went to see Henry V at the Everyman in the evening, and Stan got drunk during the afternoon in town. And then when the Muse came on, he went, oh, for a Muse of Fire. And Stan stood up and went, ah, fuck off! And the Muse, who was played by Roger Sloman, who was later in Nuts in May with Mike Lee, he said, all right, I'll come on and do it again. And and then I remember there was the ushers were chasing Stan up and down the...
Jesus Christ.
Up and down the balcony. Stan was on probation and he told me. I thought, I really envied that, because he'd go and talk to this bloke every week, you know, could tell him his hopes and fears and stuff. And he said he got a transistor radio for Christmas, but I think he might have just stolen it, I think, really. Now thinking back, but I don't know what he's doing now. Bumped into him once years ago and he acted embarrassed to meet me.
Jesus.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Well,
this is not going where I thought it would go, really. But
I did not expect us to spend 15 minutes on Shakespeare.
Absolutely.
Yeah. That's fascinating. Yeah, I've never really given him, embarrassingly, never given him too much attention. So you're saying check him out. Recommend
particularly
it.
Particularly, not the comedies. Coriolanus, I mean, Hamlet, my friend's in that, the National Theatre at the moment.
He's not 16 different people.
None of the comedies, I can't see.
Okay, cool. I wanted to ask you about if you'd heard about Zach Polanski's controversy with the boobs. Have you heard about this?
I think I heard a bit, because he was a hypnotherapist, wasn't he?
So Zach Polanski, current leader, new leader of the Green Party, bless him. I like his energy.
Yeah,
I like
fine.
His vibe.
Yeah.
But 12 years ago, when working as a private hypnotherapist, he had a session with a journalist. While previously working as a hypnotherapist, he offered a session to increase an undercover newspaper reporter's breast size and improve her body image. So he was trying to convince her that he could use hypnotherapy to make her boobs larger. Done that, someone said in the audience.
The son, all right.
Oh, that was the son.
Yeah, but didn't he charge him? And he did. Doesn't he deny aspects of that?
No, he apologized for it.
Oh, really?
That's something I did 12 years ago. And then he quoted Tony Benn, saying, he says,
I can make your tits bigger.
No.
Famous address to TUC in 1967. I could make your tits bigger.
He said, he apologized and he said he was being grilled and asked if people can trust him because he did this 12 years ago. And he said, well, Tony Benn said, I don't care where you came from, I care where you're going. And he tries to say, like, yeah, look at what I want to do, not what I've
Fair enough.
Tried to do 12 years ago. But yeah, it was an undercover Sun journalist. I wonder how, you wouldn't trust them, would you? So maybe she manipulated the conversation to make it seem like that. But what, do you think you can hypnotize someone's boobs bigger, Alexei Sale?
I actually have.
I wanted to get you talking about it.
No, I actually had.
Do you think we should trust them?
You've
done hypno?
Yeah, because I used to be terrified of flying. And so I went to see a hypnotherapist who was a retired chest surgeon. He was a chest surgeon who found that he could operate sometimes without anaesthetic because he could hypnotize people.
Oh my God.
And so we used to do flying, and he had two Boots brand tape recorders. This was a long time ago. And one, he had the sound of a plane taking off, and the other, he had the sound effects of a horrific
plane crash.
Airline terminal. And so he'd say, you're in the terminal now, and he'd play the terminal sound effects, and you're feeling relaxed, and you get on the plane. But sometimes he'd get his tapes mixed up. So he'd play, like, the terminal when you were in the air and stuff.
It's confusing.
And my friend Harry, he said, where did you go this week? I said, we went to Barcelona, and then he'd get pissed off because they didn't bring him any duty-frees. But it cured me completely.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know whether, in retrospect, I was kind of... Because I used to take... tranquilizers was the only way I could fly. Lisa's got that. When we flew to Australia with the comic strip, and I was convinced there was a dog on the plane, and I was just going everywhere. And I still don't know. I can remember sitting down next to Jennifer Saunders, and then I can remember the horrified look on her face. And things have not ever been right between me and.
Why? What did
Jennifer,
you do?
I don't know. I think it was...
Oh, you were drugged up?
I was off my head on tranquilizers, yeah. And Adrian's never really... The two of them have never really allowed me near any of their pets or anything ever since. I think I said something terrible to Jennifer. So I used to take tranquilizers. And I think I wanted to stop it. I was looking for permission, but now... So now I'm crazy for flying now.
Yeah,
in business class, of course, or first class.
But you would pay for that.
Yeah, fucking
seat.
No. The promoter would pay for it. I'm not fucking paying for it.
Okay, well, that's Zach Polanski's. Do you think we should trust him? Do you like the guy? Give us a brief.
Yeah, I was sort of standing. I went to a protest, a Gaza protest outside Downing Street a few weeks ago. It wasn't the Pots and Pans one. I can't remember what it was for. And he was standing there. And I was going to go and say hello, but I didn't. It's a good anecdote, isn't it? But yeah, he's very good. I mean, he doesn't waffle. He gets straight to the point. He does remind me a bit of Mamdani in New York, really. I think he's very he's very good, really. I mean, I'm still, Well, we were very up about your party, weren't we, a few weeks ago? And, of course, that's all those hopes have been dashed into the ground.
Do you think so?
Well, no, I think it may. I mean, I think they may pull it out of the fire. But he is a very, you know... I mean, a lot of people are joining the Greens, I think, as a kind of left alternative. And it seems a reasonable thing to do, really.
And he's not an MP yet. Is he going to... Do you think he'll end up being the Brighton MP, or...?
I don't know.
What his aims
Shoreham,
are?
What's our Shoreham, presumably, is like Heinrich Himmler, is it? Is the
who's the MP here?
Labour. Oh, it's Labour, is it? Who is it?
Tom Rutland.
I've never heard of him. I know Young Peter Tom. Kyle, who's up the coast. Brighton's a shitbag, isn't he? He's a fucking horrible piece of work. Fuckbag. Tom Rutland. I've never heard of him.
Nobody has.
Oh, is he one of them fucking... One of them young...
Someone in the audience called him, yeah, Young Chase. Tom Rutland.
Young Tom Rutland.
Well, good luck to him.
Hello, dear listener. I hope you're enjoying this episode that was recorded in Shoreham at the Rope Tackle Art Centre. We're very grateful for them welcoming us and helping us put on a great show. I'm just popping in here to remind you that full video versions of the show are available on our Patreon. That's at patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. We never want to take advertising onto the show. And in order to keep that up, we really rely on contributions from our listeners. From as little as £3 a month up to whatever you want. But it really means a lot. I'm so grateful to every member of the Patreon. And we have a lovely community chat room there. You can ask questions directly to Alexi, which is my first well that I dip into for questions for the podcast. And there's also full video episodes. As I mentioned, you'll get to see Alexi twerking at the start of this episode. You'll get to see him, he does something special at the end. I don't want to ruin it for you. And also, there are the odd bits and bobs of exclusive content, be they behind-the-scenes stuff, Alexi, Lisa, and Nigel watching The Young Ones. Me and Alexi went to a gun range once as well. We made a little film of that. That was a... strange day. All right, that's all I have. That's all I wanted to do was remind you to head to patreon.com/AlexisLPodcast. You know what? Just go and have a look and then decide what you want to do. But I urge you to go to the description of this podcast, click the link, and take a look at our website. All right? Okay, back to the show.
Seeing as we're talking to the audience, shall we see if anyone's got a question for us?
How are we doing?
Give us a bit of house lights. Let's get one question.
No, I don't like house lights.
Just so I can see the hands. Put your hand up if you have a question.
I don't like to look
us.
At their faces, dearie.
Over there,
no,
please.
Kissing.
Yell it out, and then I'm going to repeat it for the recording, but please. Nice. Okay, this is a fun little logic exercise.
What did I use?
A little puzzle. I got to repeat the question if you don't mind.
Go on, yeah.
The Riyadh Comedy Festival, state-sponsored comedy festival. I think it's at the tail end now. I think it's still happening, but comedians were getting paid minimum of $350,000 up to $1.6 million to go and perform there. The question to you, Alexi, is what would be the price that you would take? And what would be the excuse you gave the public for accepting the gig?
Glock 9mm.
H.
Might do it for that if Mohammed bin Salman could guarantee that he'd get it into the country for me.
Jesus,
I suppose that AK.
Jesus.
That's right. Might as well. You might as well get the whole AK-74, the short-barreled one. I I used to say a line, didn't I? They held a check over my eyes while I was signing the contract. I mean, which doesn't really date me, doesn't it? They held a bag of doubloons over my eyes while I was using the quill to sign the. I am
applying your wax seal.
I mean, nobody. I mean, it's sort of nobody's. I mean, they wouldn't ask. I've been so strange and so weird, particularly in my stand-up, and so not niche, but you know, in a sense that nobody is ever going to offer, you know, ask me to come to the Riyadh Comedy Festival. I think because they, you know, it wouldn't, you know, I wouldn't be faced with that dilemma. I mean,
we're living in a hypothetical scenario.
There's no amount. I mean, you could say, oh, I'll give it to Palestine or something, or, you know, but I mean, I think that, you know, I've been thinking a lot about, you know, I've been thinking a lot about myths. I did say this tonight about myths that tell us, you know, a lot about, like, you know, myths and legends, like the myth of Sisyphus, you know, where, you know, and they tell us about the modern world, don't they? You know, and so the myth of Sisyphus, where a man pushes a rock up a hill and then it endlessly rolls back, and this tells us in the modern world what it's like to manage a branch of Nando's. but similarly, they one of the films we looked at, Mephisto, selling your soul. I mean, to sell your soul, I think, which is essentially what, again, is what. I mean, all David Lammy and Starmer and Yvette Cooper. And I mean, it's essentially what all those people have done. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think I have a round of applause. Yeah, no. You know, sell their souls to the Israeli arms industry and the banks and, you know, the City of London and stuff. To say it's not. Well, fucking hell, if you turn into Yvette Cooper, I mean, it's not, nothing could be worth, no amount of money could be worth that fucking, I've just been married to Ed Balls. I mean, no amount of money could compensate you for that, really. But you do, you do kind of see it in their faces. I think that you lose, if you allow yourself to be corrupted, which politicians do, and again, I mean, just come back to Henry V. Coriolanus as well. That, you know, if you allow yourself to become corrupted, then you essentially sell yourself, really. So there is no amount of money that I would do the Riyadh Comedy Festival for. But I am. Thank you. But
same, me too.
But my agent is Michelle Milburn at MMB Creative. If they just want to run it past me, but it's
it is kind of disheartening.
It's shocking,
to see,
really,
especially a couple of the names on there.
Dave Chappelle,
like, what the fuck, just, man?
Yeah.
And then there's been bits and pieces of the contract been leaked out. Like you're not allowed to criticize religion. You're not allowed to criticize, obviously, the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia or any of the royal family. And to think, like, Louis C.K., Dave Chappelle, like, what are they going to fucking talk about?
Yeah.
You know, what the fuck are they going to do? But there's... And also, like, a lot of people saying these guys are often outspoken about things like free speech and stuff, and now they have no right ever... Which I kind of have to agree with. They have no right to weigh in on that conversation ever again.
Yeah, if you sell yourself
to go and take money from this
MBS,
government that literally kills people for speaking.
Yeah.
But, and then I saw a clip. I was trying to look at, like, both sides and see what people are saying to justify. And although he wasn't justifying it necessarily, our previous guest, Bassem Youssef, I saw a clip of him saying... there was an American asking him his opinion. And then he basically said, I don't think Americans have any right to criticize other governments. Like, our government is fucking dog shit and evil. It's probably the most evil government in the world. He was saying, like, so how can we as Americans sit here and pass judgment on the Saudi government when our government is probably just as bad or worse?
Did he do the festival?
He's not doing the festival.
Oh, right.
No.
Oh, well.
He's not doing the festival. But that's, I suppose. And, like, the British government is no good either. But you can't help being from somewhere.
Yeah, no, it's not. You're not speaking with the backing of the British government, but you can, you know, you can criticise other people on a personal level. If you yourself are, if you yourself are ideologically pure, and if you've forgotten all those advertising voiceovers I did in the in the 90s, Wild Bean Cafe at BP Connect, great food on the go. Which it wasn't, I can tell you now.
I don't think Bassam's point holds water, really, because you're not going to take a state-funded gig here or in America either.
No.
So taking a state-funded gig over there is just as bad.
No, Bassam's a bit of a handful, isn't he, really?
There, but I do, as an Arab, I do notice that maybe there is a bit of, there's a tinge of kind of an excuse to hate on Arabs or an Islamophobic kind of maybe vibe to it. But yeah, thanks for the question.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks for the question. Yeah.
Is this all you hoped for? I suppose you didn't know really what it was going on.
No, some of them were...
You know, they got posters of... posters of all the artists who've been here in the green room, haven't they? I haven't heard of one of the fuckers. Oh, it was weird. The people that come down, Zazie Shaw. Who the fuck is she? Membem. They're the band. Oh, thanks. Oh, thanks for giving us a great time, Tom. All the members of Membem and our fucking acidic fucking reggae fusion music or whatever the fuck it is. I don't know. I've never heard of one of the fuckers.
Alexi, do you want to get paid for tonight?
I'm sorry.
Or what?
Sabotage. I'm getting paid. You never told me about that.
I asked on Instagram if anyone had a question for you. Gav said, "Hi ho, fiddle dee dee, and half a pound of muesli. What do you think of Shirley Williams?" I think that's.
I want to go to the toilet.
But someone else said, "Whoops Apocalypse is my favourite sitcom."
Yeah.
Could it get made today?
No, I mean, Whoops Apocalypse. I mean, weird. Whoops Apocalypse was written by David Rennick and Andrew Marshall. And
anyone here remember it?
It was very odd, really. I mean, David and Andrew, then we wrote stuff together, but they, and then obviously David went on to do One Foot in the Grave and Jonathan Creek.
Oh, I don't believe it.
Yeah. And, but it was. It was London weekend television. So at the weekend, you got this opt-out, didn't you, where I think all the nation's telly came from London weekend. And it was about 10 o'clock. There was this sitcom about nuclear war, I think.
Right.
That went out. I mean, you can't imagine now that it would... I mean, it was pretty odd. I mean, you know, I played a KGB torturer, I think, called... it's a Solzhenitsyn, no relation, brackets. And, that's a Solzhenitsyn joke. That's a Russian dissident joke from the 80s. And they made a movie as well. We made a movie.
Yes.
Yeah. And I,
what year was this?
It was pretty early on. Before Young Ones, I think.
87, the year I was born. Later?
The movie was 87.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the last time I flew anywhere on tranquilizers because that's right, the day after, and I was still getting like flashbacks from the tranquilizers. We'd flown to Miami and we just went down Flagler Street, which is a kind of black neighborhood, and the tranquilizers suddenly kicked in, and I started, because I was so impressed, I started imitating these black guys on the streets. I was going, "Yo, Jimmy, motherfucker! What's up, my man? Dog!" And Linda's fucking getting him in a cab quick. "What's up, my brother?" And I did, I was just like, boom, I started imitating this because I was so struck by these black guys, and so they bundled me in a cab. And that's the last
time. Do you ever go to America and not make a fucking tit of yourself?
No. No, probably not.
That's so fucked. Get him in a cab.
Oh, yeah, well, Jimmy, and they're going, "What's up? White motherfucker doing?" What's he howling and hollering at me, that white motherfucker? Is this racist now? In 2025? It used to
be. Yeah, no, it used to, I'm sure.
What's that? I'm going to fucking get my fucking gentleman's club. 9mm. I'm getting my...
Stop
shoot
it.
That white motherfucker. You're being... Hollering at me. Yo, Jimmy, what?
You're being a proper jive turkey, mate. Stop. Yeah. Alexis Sale listed in the Whoops Apocalypse movie... Your credit, you're listed as Alexis Sale in a Hawaiian shirt. It's the name of your character.
Yeah.
That's funny.
I speak Russian. I can... Dva dvut amerikansky journalistov nada ich likvidirov strazuzhe. For some reason, if I've ever had to speak a foreign language in a film, I can remember it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, the lines.
Yeah, the lines, yeah. Tepoeda Yivara, siesta, my... When I played the Madrid taxi driver, who was also the angel of death. Te puedo llevar a Centro Perros, a cobra man off the mingle.
Very good.
I can take you into the center. Thank you. Muchas gracias. Señores y señoritas. I can take you into the center, but it costs more on Sundays. which is it turned out much more useful on several times than you'd think, really.
You've when I've been money. In Madrid. It looks like the last boat in the Gaza flotilla has been intercepted.
Oh, shit.
They were going down one by one. This little tiny boat was just pushing on and dodging all the naval ships, but they got him, it looks like.
Oh, yeah, we've managed to avoid that.
And our friend of the show, previous guest, yeah. Tig Hickey's on currently in custody in Israel. So solidarity and you know, well wishes, hopes and prayers to all those people. But and fucking Ben Gavir went to visit them and they were all sat on the floor and he was standing there going, "You terrorists," calling them all terrorists. It looked a bit like this actually. They're all sat in front of it.
A chance to punch the cunt, wasn't it?
It's pretty scary. It must be very scary.
There's
so many of them. And then they're already sent the next wave out. Next wave of ships.
Apparently, it was hard, but the people in Gaza are going down to the beaches.
Because the Israeli Navy have been so preoccupied, it's allowed fishermen to go out and catch massive netfuls of fish and bring them back to land. So, in a way, they have brought food into Gaza because normally they'd get fucking shot for being out in the sea. I've seen footage actually, massive hauls of little mackerel and stuff. So, people are eating good. For once.
All right.
Thanks to them,
Yeah, good for them.
But oh man, all along, whenever they were sailing, I was like, I wish I could be on that boat with them and help just do anything because we feel so fucking impotent out here, not able to do anything. But now I'm not wishing that now. That they've all been, don't know how they would treat me in an Israeli prison.
I feel like I'd start talking to them about the guns because they got the M4 carbine that 5.6 that most of the Israelis have.
No, up to H, I think. You got one for
Eckler
H?
And Koch, yeah. Easy fucking peasy, Eckler and Koch.
But you know what?
MP5, which we saw when the MP5 was introduced to us during the. When the SAS stormed into the Iranian embassy stage, where your dad was being held as a hostage.
Yeah,
so MP5, well, he'd already got out. But, I mean, the MP5 was what?
Yeah, dad had gone out by then. Yeah. And it's dad's birthday today. Rest in peace. Love you, dad. What was I going to say? So I discovered that this flotilla, there was actually like 30,000 people applying to go and be part of the cruise. And they actually, so I was like, oh, they have more than enough people volunteering, but they're vetting. The crucial bit, I don't know if you know this, so that when the Israeli board the ship is like obviously a very crucial part of the whole thing and they're expecting it to happen. And so that is the bit they focus a lot of their training on. They do this 3-day training where they simulate that situation. Right. And the main thing is you just can't do anything. You have to do, the training is just training into not reacting, not doing anything stupid because you're getting these crazed IDF soldiers.
I could play an IDF soldier in that simulation, couldn't I?
You could,
I'd bring my own M4 carbine.
But these fuckers are so trigger happy, and very often they're like pepped up on all sorts of amphetamines and shit. And if you do it, they want any excuse to just shoot the whole crew, which they've done previously. So they're trained to just like not. And I think that restraint, I don't know if I'd be able to have that restraint of not telling them to go fuck themselves and all this shit. So yeah, it's crazy. There's real training, real metal. Yeah,
it brought the mood right down.
It's all right. It's a podcast. It's not always going to be. All right. Let's do something about willies. Here, I got an article about. Okay, I was going to talk about Manchester actually, but
we've avoided that so far.
Let's get another question. Has anyone got a question for us? You got a hand right there in the middle? Yes, please. Oh my.
What is your happiest professional moment?
Okay, what is your biggest professional regret and your happiest professional moment, Alexi?
I think I'm unusual in performance in that I love talking about failure really and my failures. I know there was a review of Ben Elton's fucking memoir in The Guardian this week where he just goes on about how you know, Paul McCartney came up to him and said how great he was and stuff like that. And, you know, he's just detailing all this. You know, I mean, that is one of my, you know, I think it's really important he's made a fundamental mistake in his memoir in that you should never settle scores in a memoir because it makes you look petty and thin-skinned, which Ben is anyway. But, I mean, so he is revealing himself. And, of course, that is that. And I used to say shitty things about him. I've said this before, but I realised that, you know, it just makes you look bad if you moan about other people. So I went up to him and at a party and apologised to him. And in a kind of quid pro quo, he invited me to the opening night of his Rod Stewart musical, Tonight's the Night. And in those three interminable fucking hours, I paid for every shitty thing I'd ever said about anybody ever.
Tonight's the night.
So,
So you regret being a little sassy?
I regret. Because it just makes you look petty. I think when you moan about other performers, you know, even if they are, I mean. Regardless of the truth of what you're moaning about, it always makes you just look petty and small-minded, really. If you apparently he mentions me in his memoir and complains about me slagging him off. but that is a regret, really. The thing that impresses me about myself. Tremendously, really, is that I have when I stopped doing stand-up for 17 years and then came back and then did particularly Sandwich Bar. I am immensely proud of Sandwich Bar. I think I remember when we were recording the first or second series, I was thinking to myself they should just stop comedy now because it will it will never get any better than this, really. You know, they should really, everybody should give up. It takes about, I don't know if I'd do, we've done five series now, Sandwich Bar. And it takes an awful lot of work. It takes 2 years to write it, really. I'm very grateful to Radio 4. I kind of love the Radio 4 audience in a way. And it's just a perfect synthesis of me, and it's innovative. It's completely, it's not sticking to the same. It's very different to what I used to do, you know. Yeah. So, you know, it's not that sort of man the tight suit or anything. So I find that tremendously impressive about myself that I've managed to kind of find a new thing to do, and also I'm not as competitive. I mean, I used to be insanely competitive and stuff, you know, and there'd be some, like, benefit for crippled children or something, and I would have to be the most successful, you know. I'd have to kill the fucking audience, which crippled children's. But you know, you really, you know, I'd have to be the best on the bill and all that. And it's like, let all that go, really, I think. Yeah. I'm prepared to be like really dull and uninteresting like tonight.
No, you're not. You're a fascinating fellow. And Sandwich Bar is great. And then I'm really happy for you to have something that you're proud of. No, so, and the books. So late in your career.
Yeah, yeah. I'm 73.
It's nice.
I'm 73.
73. That's old.
It is old. Fuck, I know.
Good on you.
I'm very limber.
You're fit and healthy.
I'm fit and healthy. It's martial arts, man.
Let's get another question. Anyone? Anyone? Ooh. Ho, 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 ho. Oh, no, you're being pushy. I'll come to you next. At the back there. At the very back.
Because I ate it.
How do you know that honey tasted
free
like
honey,
dog
I'm
shit?
Not passing that up.
Yeah, but have you eaten dog shit? Yeah. Is the question.
Oh, I see. I didn't realize.
You smell dog shit.
Oh, right.
It tastes like dog shit smells.
It smelled like dog shit. Yeah.
Urban honey is not a good idea.
No.
Like, it's good it for the. Like we should do it because bees. We need to save the bees and all that, but don't give me the honey. Use it as like compost or something. A fertilizer.
Well, there's a fair question there.
He got your ass, is what he did. Yeah. All right, then. A pushy person. Your question. This lovely gentleman in the crowd said in his O levels, he had to pick a book to go and talk about in front of the class, and he chose Alexei Sayle's Train to Hell. We'd love to hear you talk about that book. What's it about?
It was the first book that I did, Geoffrey Straw and Matthew. And I had a long break, and then I started writing the short stories like Parcel and Plates and Dogcatcher and the novels like Overtaken. And I thought that was they were kind of high end literary fiction, really. And so I treated. Well, in my mind, they were anyway. Certainly in terms of the Booker Prize jury, they didn't think so. But, I mean, as far as I was concerned, it was comparable with Gabriel Garcia Marquez or Dostoevsky. But, So the three books that I did, which are sort of comedy books, Train to Hell, Geoffrey the Tube Train, and Great Bus Journeys of the World, I tended to not talk about them or think about them very much, really. It was very influenced by Spike Milligan's Pacoon, Train to Hell, I think. But, I tend not really to look at my own work that much, to think about it that much. But, the drawings were, and I carried that on doing the drawings. And, when I had the column in Time Out, and then, I carried on doing the drawings, really. So,
what's Train to Hell about?
It was actually based on a friend of mine, Ian Williams, was a railway guard, and he was on this. Liverpool were in the European Cup final in the 70s, I think. And they put all these scousers, it was when football was very, out of fashion. They put all these scousers on a train which left Lime Street Station and eventually ended up in Rome, I think. And Ian was the guard on this train. And so it was just this idea. One of my favourite, we talked about the film Von Ryan's Express, that film where the prisoners steal the train. It was sort of this train meandering its way across the continent. And I don't know how it got across the channel now I think about it. But anyway, this train meandering its way across the European railway lines to Rome just fascinated me. And then I put in a murder kind of mystery, I think. But it was a comedy book, really, and it sold tremendously badly, I think.
Was the book full of football hooligans in your?
I can't remember. There was a comedy Czechoslovak something called Slobo Arsic, wasn't there? I can't remember what it's about now. But thank you for using it. How old are you? When did I write that? Like 84 or something? Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Before I was born. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, so I don't know. Yeah, it'd be interesting to look at it, really. I'm not so sad.
You passed your O-levels. Oh, well done. Well done. Congratulations.
O-levels are a magical rite of passage that we used to have to go through.
And is that the equivalent of the A-levels or GCSEs?
No, O-levels are before A-level. I don't know.
Just like GCSE. No,
I've only got...
Right.
I've got four, actually. Two grade threes, art and history, and two grade fours, English literature and English language. But I've got four honorary professorships, so fuck off.
Who gave you those?
Thames Valley University, which doesn't exist anymore, and was called in the News of the World the most evil university in Britain. It is the birthplace of Al Majharoon, the Islamic student organisation. Liverpool University, what the fuck? I can't even remember what one of them was. Edge Hill University, which is in Ormskirk. Do you know Edge Hill University?
Oh.
I only did that because it's near where my relatives live. And the University of the Arts. I'm a fellow of the University of Arts, which is Chelsea
wow.
Arts School and Central St. Martin's. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Professor Sale.
I can call myself Professor, yeah.
Professor Sale.
Yeah, yeah.
I should be treating you with a bit more respect than deference, I think. Jesus. I got a diddly squat. I barely got a BA, but no one cares about me.
I've got a dip AD.
A dip AD?
Yeah, Diploma in Art and Design. It was the last year. Became a BA after I left Chelsea Law School. And I've got a cert ed as well, a certificate in education, which I did with Sheila, who's near tonight. Went to teacher training college. I was a college lecturer.
Yes, you
for
were.
For several years. And the kids used to say to me, sir.
Right?
Yeah, in London College of Princeton, yeah.
Yeah.
Kids used to say to me, sir, why are we here? And I'd say, fucked if I know. Do you want to go home?
That would have been a fun class.
I wasn't really, though. They didn't respect me, actually. They didn't. That. I was. No, letting them go home is not what they wanted, really. They wanted boundaries and borders, and I wouldn't give them any, so they sort of despised me, really.
Mm. Yeah, people like being told what to do.
Yeah, I couldn't act the teacher. I couldn't say I'm really disappointed in you, Jenkins, because I wasn't, because I didn't care.
Shit.
Ah, fuck Jenkins. Do what you fucking want.
Do what you want, Jenkins.
I had one that,
did anyone ever bring you an apple?
No, he used to go out drinking with one bookbinder, I think. I think wasn't alcoholic, really. I remember us being thrown out to a pub in Covent Garden and me shouting, I'm his moral guardian.
Poor guy.
Shit, you could do it in college. I mean, you couldn't do any of that now. Any of that, you know. Shit, you could get away with in those days.
Let's see if there's any more. Any other questions? Oh, yes, back there.
Hiya. Oh, good. Yeah, okay.
Interesting.
The British comedy.
So in America, you got Kimmel and Colbert who speak truth to power, and they're getting their shows cancelled by the American government and that. And this fellow was saying American comedians tend to be more, what's the phrase? What was it you said? More challenging and more extreme than the British comics, who seem to be quite tame in comparison. Who's going to stand up to Farage?
Well, who should be cancelled? Ben Elton, obviously. fucking upstart crow. Oh, Christ.
What's about Shakespeare, your favourite?
I know, yeah. So. Our agent represents David Mitchell, so we can't
careful.
Slag him off. I think there's never really been that history of political comedy in the way that there was. I mean, we've never had the late. I mean, they tried to do feeble kind of versions of like Letterman or
the Jonathan Ross show.
Jonathan Ross, exactly. So, which was always a kind of, you know, always a kind of a neutered beast to start off with. We've never really had that tradition on TV of the political stand-up, the kind of, you know, like people like George Carlin or... apart from me, obviously.
We've got News for You, I think. It's the most kind of... Yeah, but it is our... It's the only show where they actually criticise the government for laughs. You know?
Is that any good? I haven't seen it. It's on 70th series now, isn't it?
I used to like it when I was a kid. I haven't watched it in ages. And the MASH report did get cancelled for being too anti-Tory. That was literally the reason Tim Davey gave for cancelling it. Yeah. So we had that.
Yeah, we've never had that tradition really in Britain. So there's, I don't know. You know, nobody's going to get cancelled because there's nobody there in the first place. Really.
You do see it on stage, but on telly, yes, you're right. Sure, it's not there. But if you go out to the comedy clubs, you do see it, and there are more and more nights being created to create a anti-establishment space, like you know. Another previous guest, Sammy, he runs a night in London now. It's called Everything is Fucked. And that's the name of the comedy night. And it kind of sets the tone. And I saw a comedian there called Andrew O'Neill, who's brilliant and very good at speaking about politics. And I think Robin Ince is good in that department too. And I liked his poems, I have to say. He's good.
All right, so it is out there. Frankie Boyle. Yeah, what's happened with him? I don't know. I don't really... I've lost touch with... I mean, I'm not
He's
really...
He's a podcaster now.
Is he still... He was a bit slack over Corbyn, wasn't he?
He was shit over Corbyn. He jumped in on the anti-Semitism thing, pissed me off.
That lie. So, I mean...
But he's a fan of you and this show, so...
Not enough to come on.
Well, he will.
Really?
Eventually, yeah. So let's just... You know what, Frankie? You bastard. Come on the show.
Well, we'll take that dismissive reference to him out then.
but these guys aren't on telly anymore. They've taken his show off there.
That's true, yeah.
Stuart Lee's not on telly anymore. I don't know if they'd give him another show.
No, it's dark times, really. Yeah. You know, it is.
And it'll get worse if Farage gets into power. You know, he'll crack down even more.
Yeah.
They're the ones who go on about free speech and talk about how important free speech is and GB News should be protected and all that. But if someone speaks against them, suddenly, watch your tongue, mister.
Yeah. It's hard. It's weird to live through this period, really. I mean, it's hard to feel it's happening, really, you know, until it really does.
It is hard to wrap your head around. And I wonder in 20 years' time what it's going to be like looking back at this period.
Yeah.
What the fuck are we going to have to say for ourselves?
I think AI is going to save us, maybe. I don't know. Grok. I don't know.
Right. We're going to wrap up in a moment, Alexei.
Oh, yeah. Now we've reached this pinnacle of...
Now, at this peak, yeah, you know, you'll leave them wanting more, you know.
I'm doing the physical comedy. Okay.
Yeah, doing something. Has anyone got a question to take us home? We've got one more. At the front, yes, please, madam.
Oh, what should I do? My TikTok dance. Yeah, my interpretive dance.
Shall we finish on a dance?
Yeah, should we do that? All right. Have you got any
should
music?
I get Pug? Can you cue something up on Spotify for us if I ask for it? Can you put Aperta by Bruno Mars and...
I don't know if you all know this, but I do.
APT is how you spell it. It should be the first thing that comes up if you put APT. Have you found it, Pug? Quick question before the dance. Yeah, yeah. Get back to your mic, Alexi.
What's your favourite
volivant? My favourite volivant? On the mic, Alexi. What's your favourite volivant?
Well, a volivant is just a delivery system, isn't it, really? It's... Hey, the filling. Filling. Prawn, Mary Rose. And and I found, when I found out the Mary Rose sauce is just ketchup and mayonnaise, yeah?
Yeah.
And it cut my Mary Rose bills in half, really, because...
you already had ketchup and mayo.
This is the information they don't want you to have. Big sauce. Mary Rose, yeah, sauce is just ketchup and mayonnaise. And my bills were...
Horseradish,
A bit of horseradish.
thank but you. Yeah, you. In can... fucking Shoreham, we get asked, what's your favourite vol-au-vent? Right, Alexi, up on your feet. Let's take this on its feet. Let's take this home. All right, have you got aperture, pug? Yeah. Nice. Look, you're going to press play. Alexi's going to dance. When I put my hand up, stop the music. And then I'm going to run at you with a mic. Okay. Think of a Marxism fact.
Yeah, Marxism. Right.
All right. Let's do this.
All right. I don't think this was going to go like this.
We're going to take this home with some Marxism TikTok dancing. Fuck me. Is this what we do now? All right, warm up, limbered up. All right. Ready? Hit it, pug.
정의가 좋아하는 랜덤 게임. 랜덤 게임. 게임 스타트.
Now.
아파트, 아파트. 아파트, 아파트. 아파트, 아파트.
Marxism is essentially a materialist philosophy which bases its analysis on class. It says that there are essentially three classes: the working class, the petty bourgeoisie, those who own their own means of production, and the bourgeoisie, the boss class.
Hit it, hit it, hit the music! Not that music, the aperture! All right, that's been Alexi Sell Podcast. Thank you very much, everybody. Take good care. Nice seeing you, Shoreham. Stick around, have a drink. We might come say hello. Bye-bye. Alexi Sell! Oh,